breathtaking and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlines. Its dissenters are silenced, not praised.
Millions of people just living out their lives, oblivious.
Choice is an illusion created between those with power and those without.
I drink your milkshake. I drink it up.
Thank you, John Larson. I receive your kind words on behalf of all of our courageous members of the House of Representatives who want the best for the American people. And what we can do that is best for them in the next 24 hours is to pass affordable, accessible health care for all Americans. The best for all Americans is to have 32 million more people to have health insurance in our country.
Poor.
The best for...
Piece of stinking filth.
Shh, setting a shop. This is AJ of the InfoWars. Listen to the Shaliak. This is Alex Jones of InfoWars. Listen to Shaliak on the Cold Reality News and Report.
This is the coolest thing I have ever seen.
Well, hello there!
Hey folks, welcome. You're the Cold Reality Radio Report. This is Clint Richardson taking over for Shali today. Just going to be me alone today. I got some major rants to do, as I often do. Thought we'd talk a little bit about the Trump issue that's going on. Not that I like to get involved in such trash, such absolute media trash. But I think there's some good points to be made with what is being portrayed right now with that, because, of course, everything's designed to deceive and mislead and misdirect and fulfill an agenda. So we'll talk a little bit about that. And then I was going to get into the vast concept of executive authority today. Shali mentioned a little bit about it with Obama passing a recent executive order. Or actually fulfilling a already existing one having to do with the terrorism, of course, of 9/11. And that's a very important part of the presidency, which we'll get into. It's why I'm so concerned with the presidency, why I made my recent video about voting and what it actually does and what it allows and what Congress has actually allowed with the president. I thought I'd try something different. I just thought I'd play a couple songs today just to get me in the mood. This is, see if this even works, I don't know. But this is one of my favorite groups when I was growing up. Of course, I grew up in the 80s with the sort of burgeoning alternative weirdness that was the 80s music. But I always liked The Fix. The Fix, I thought, had this unique sound. It was, I don't know, there was just something about it. I look back at it now, I can't really say anything bad about them. I know they build themselves as pagan, sort of a paganistic type of thing, but their music was intelligent. Their lyrics were kind of like Rush. They were just off the charts, not like anything else I'd heard, and so I gravitated towards groups like this. But I just wanted to play a song by The Fix just to test this out and see if music can come through here or not. So here you go. This is Less Cities and More Moving People, a title that I think is apropos to our current situation. Let's see if it works here, huh? Let's see.
Another home falls by the wayside.
you all cushions stuffed with pride. My hand is shaking from the rubble. This is spirit still alive. Serving bears is occupation. Breaks his back just growing old. Never mind. This is the taker. Just so by the rules of old. This city's boring people. Rushing out with blood. Ooh, the city's more moving people. These hands are once my time. Church bell rang for the occasion. The average band knows what's in store. Now he sees where life was taken. Fighting, growing cold. This city's for moving people. Rushing out with light. Oh, this city's for moving people. Hands across the is this what we call education? Just watch the wheel of time revolve. But why is this not what I'm thinking? It's just one mind in the unknown. Less cities, more moving people. Rushing out with blood. Let's see more moving people. Just forgotten. Let's see more moving people. Rushing out with life. Let's see more moving people.
There you go, folks. Probably a group you're not that familiar with, but it was certainly one of my favorites. So these guys, they're talking about Big Brother, man. It was if you actually watch the video, they're explaining, you know, we've all been tricked into living in these big giant corporations. They're called municipal corporations, cities, counties, and states. That's what they are, folks, municipal corporations. When you enter and leave into these little districts, these little places that don't actually exist except on some map, you notice that you're leaving the corporate limits of the city. You know, I never thought of that when I was a child. I never thought of that, what that meant when I was growing up. Because I had nobody teaches us this type of thing. Nobody teaches us that we're incorporated individuals in a municipal corporation of the state. Districted by the federal government, district meaning to put in distress and distraint and seizure. Look it up. You know, no one ever told me that the District of Columbia, the district is another word for Caesar. Nobody told me that. Distress, distraint, and seizure. Nobody told me that. And so I have a special place in my heart for these types of guys, man. They figured it. They know what's going on. They're singing about it. And they give you little hints, little clues. They put these odd lyrics out there that you have to figure them out half the time. You have to decipher them to the point where you can actually get what they're actually trying to tell you. And I found that to be the case with a lot of bands, especially in the 80s, that for the most part, a lot of lyrics sounded nonsensical until you actually kind of grasp what they were trying to say. there's quite a few songs I think that would be apropos. We'll play a few more of those as we move along. But let's talk about. I want to talk to the women out there. I really do. Because I know there's a giant movement for rights going on. And one of those is equal and fair treatment of women by men. And I don't think that women really want that. I don't think that what women are truly searching for is equal rights. Because, first of all, by claiming to be a wool man, a man of the womb, a wool man, you're claiming to be a legal entity anyway, so you're already claiming to be something different than man. So there's nothing equal about you because you're now a legal entity, and there is never equality among legal entities unless the legal authorities claim and tell you that you're equal, and they will assign you your rights, which is why you have to try to, quote-unquote, fight to attain them. This is what pisses me off about people, is that they actually think that they have the right. I have the right to do this. I have the right to travel. Well, don't mistake the right to travel, which is to get on your damn feet and get out of these cities and move. Don't mistake that right for the right to hop on a freaking airplane and go everywhere in the world. Don't mistake that right for being able to drive a freaking car all over the road and all over the place. Don't forget, man, roads, airplanes, cars, those are new things. Those are modern era things. Those are not something that had anything to do with rights. The right to travel means the right to be left alone when you are traveling, but when you're driving some monster machine, you think you have the right to do that? No, you don't have the right to do that. Folks, for one thing, it's a violation of the laws of nature. Okay? You don't have that right. That is not a natural right because it's not something of nature. You wanna have equal rights, you wanna have true equality and equity out there, well, then you better start rethinking your stance. You better start understanding that a right is something that is forced upon you. It is not something that is voluntary. There's two forms of rights, and I really want you to understand this. There's the right in nature that all men have, that all men are created equal. Man means male or female, not woe man, not black, not white. None of those concepts of man apply. Skin color doesn't apply. Because, see, what you're talking about is God's law. You're talking about the natural law. So when you have a right under the natural law, that comes with a correlating duty. The duty is way more important than the right. The duty is what should be praised. The duty is what should be expressed at all times. It's the duty that matters because through the duty comes the right. The right manifests because of the duty. What is the duty? The duty is that concept you hear all the time of do no harm. What is the right of all men? To be left the fuck alone. That's what the true right of all men is, to be left alone. Hey, no, thank you, go away. Okay, I respect your right. I will fulfill my duty to leave you alone. That's called a negative right. That's what you have in nature. Okay? These are the things that we must strive to be at all times. We must strive each to fulfill that natural duty. And through the duty comes the right. Now, inversely, we have positive law. We have the law of men. not of nature. We have the artificial law, the legal law, that which is opposed to God's nature, God's law, natural law, okay? That's called a positive law, and therefore your rights are also positively put forward. Now here's the difference. Whereas before, the idea is to fulfill a duty, and therefore the right automatically comes. In this case, not so much. Now we're talking about a positive right. Now, it is our duty to fulfill whatever government tells us to fulfill through contract. And if we don't, well, then the government has the right to absolutely not leave us alone. See, we're giving away that natural right, that negative state of being. We're accepting a positive state of being. We're accepting a positively granted right, which means that that right can be forced upon us. What's the right in natural law? To be left alone. What's the right in positive law? To get your shit fucked with. That's your right. It is your right under Title 42, Section 1981. Look it up. So that you understand what a right is in the positive law. And a positive law is anything that comes out of the mouth of those bastards in Congress. The quote-unquote lawmakers. Title 42, Section 1981 says it's your right to be put in pain, punished, taxed, licensed, and extorted. And the word there is exaction. Remember, exaction is, of course, the taking of something that is not one's due. Exaction is the worst kind of extortion. And so what you figure out, what you begin to figure out, is that government is simply the mafia. It's the mafia model. Why did the mafia just move into government? Because under government, what the mafia does is legal. Why not go the legal route? Why not get licensed to practice organized crime? It's the only thing that really makes sense. And we accept it. And we agree to it. Why do we agree to it? Well, for one, we're tricked into it at birth. Our parents are tricked into it at their birth. And so on and so forth for thousands of years. That's one problem. But it's also about protection. Protection and subjection. Remember, to protect and serve, right? To serve summons and to protect the municipal corporations are there to protect the private people from the public people, the mass of illiterates, so that the mass of illiterates like us don't harm the private people who control us, tax us, license us, extort us for everything we're worth. That's what they're there for, those police officers. They're not there for you. They're your they're your antithesis. They're guarding the assets of the municipal corporation. They are employees of a corporation that calls itself a city, state, or county. They are not your friends. I don't care how many donuts, your coffee cups you have with them. They are there to guard you. And the reason they're there to guard you, we'll explain. Because you're under the Libra Code. You're under, well, I won't say you're under martial law. Martial law is only the last step of what is called military rule. Military rule, just like war and peace, what is peace but commerce, free-flowing? What is war when commerce stops and the nations and the gods of those nations need to have a war like we're about to have because commerce is getting so gummed up, the money situation is so screwed up that it's time for a war so that we can have peace, which is merely free-flowing commerce owned by the states, by the nations, international trade, international commerce. As long as the sea is clear and the flags are being flown peacefully and trade is commencing, then we're at quote-unquote, legal peace. But you see, any time anytime that commercial situation, that law of the sea gets messed up, the rule of the road, which is the law of the sea, well then, that's when all these, first of all the United States attacks go on. That's where all these undeclared quote-unquote wars are happening. There's no war, folks. We haven't had a war since World War II. There is no war. It's a commercial enterprise. That's what all you military people are involved in. Don't think you're heroes. You're not. You're participating in something absolutely freaking horrible. The international trade system of mammon. You're not protecting anybody but the state. And we, the common people, are not part of the state. And again, we'll talk about the labor code. We'll talk about how we are not a nation. What I'm trying to say here is that there's no difference between peace and war. And that the only difference there is that war is more profitable than peace. Peace is like a sale at Kmart, a blue light special. But frick, oh my God, when war happens, hey, the economy booms into action there. These guys make all kinds of money. They have all kinds of excuses to make weapons and uniforms and all these. It's a wonderful time for the economy. I still cringe when I remember talking to my father and even my mother, but mostly my father, and how he was so proud of his quote-unquote service, dropping bombs on innocent people as a navigator in Vietnam, a country that had no air force, no way to fight back. Right? I have no respect for this man because he had a service job. Who was he serving? I have no respect for his military career, and I certainly have no respect for anybody in the military who authorized the Agent Orange to be dropped over there that caused my father to be sick the rest of his life, be put on 100% disability, make a nice little income for being disabled the rest of his life for supposedly serving his country. It doesn't make sense anymore. I don't think anybody out there really can make sense of the military apparatus anymore, especially if you're a part of it. Yeah, you can justify it because it's where your paycheck comes from. That's what mercenaries do. That's what prostitutes do. They justify their participation in something fucking wholly evil because they're getting paid. That's the system of mammon. That's how it works. You put a value on someone's life, and that value is less than the money you're going to receive for taking that life. That's fucking evil. You have no honor. No freaking honor in serving the United States. I'm sorry to burst your bubble. And most of you won't have your bubble burst because you're getting a freaking paycheck. Even though that paycheck is worthless, even though you see how the United States treats its freaking veterans, even though you see what's going on, you refuse to see it with open eyes. You refuse to see it for what it is. You got a whole system just breaking down right in front of your eyes, and you're a part of it. You're guarding it, for God's sake. And you're guarding us, and you don't even, I don't even know how many military brats even know that the reason that there's a military base in every frickin' state of the Union is because they're guarding the common people. I don't think people know that under war, under the military rule, and that martial law can be declared at any time. I mean, you got to think about these things logically. If martial law can be declared, that means it's already there. There would be a law against it if it wasn't already in place, just because the troops aren't in the streets yet. Just because you're not seeing the signs of it. It's like war and peace. It's a scale, folks. War and peace is kind of like the terrorist scale of 1 to, hot to cold, or 1 to 5, or 1 to 10. You're always somewhere on that scale. But that scale is indicative of the fact that you are under military rule. And who rules the military? That's what we're going to be talking about today. Who indeed rules the military? It's called the executive department. It's why you have executive orders. That's why the Civil War was not a war. It was an executive order. An executive absolute attack on the people, the common people of the states. And do you know that to this day, there has never been a cessation of the Civil War? Because what is a civil war? It's not a war. You can't have a war between your own people. That's an oxymoron. It's not a real war. A civil war. That's a war between persons. That's a war. That's a war of commerce, and it's still happening. We'll explain that a little later here. Let's before I talk about this whole. Of course I'm gonna get an advertisement, so my apologies, but I'm gonna play another song about cities and how fucked up it's made us to live in these cities and to exist in this horrible situation. One of my other favorite bands, of course, Rush. And we'll come back, we'll talk about this so-called equal rights and these comments made by Trump 11 years ago. Hold on, folks. A little commercial, my apologies. Thank you. Issue with any kind of copyright problems, but perhaps there is that on this, and so I apologize if that's the case. Someone better let me know before I play the next song that I can't play it. That's what it is to live in a free country, apparently. Oh, free country, but no, I can't play anything. No, no. You know, that's my problem with the whole aspect of copywriting and patenting is perhaps the most ridiculous part of our society. Because, you know, what's so amazing about, let's take patents, for example. Patents only apply to persons, first of all, statuses. So if I'm a United States citizen and there is a cure for cancer, well, then I have no access to it. Now, if I'm a private individual, if I live in any other country, you know, I can do whatever I want. But when it comes to being a public citizenship, well, unfortunately, that means that... we have no access to the cure for cancer unless we get a permission, because the company will patent and thus own the cancer. Now, why it is that when that cancer is in my body and it needs to be cured, I can't go to that company and sue it for its cancer, its property, being in my frickin' body? Oh, no, no, we only own the cure, not the cancer. Oh, no, no, no. Well, wait a minute. You're getting the pleasure, the privilege, the profit of owning the cure for cancer and not giving it to anybody because you have a patent. And yet I can't sue you for having a frickin' patent on something that's killing me. Wait a minute, that doesn't make sense now, does it? Oh, it makes sense if you understand the system we're living in. It makes perfect sense when you live in such frickin' evil. When you live in such a ridiculous situation as we do in municipal corporations and districts. The District of Caesar, absolutely it makes sense. Absolutely it makes sense. What's amazing about the patent issue to me, one of the things I found out is that, you know what, anything that's patented, folks, the whole concept behind the patent idea is to bring things into the public, quote-unquote public, right? This is why you should always keep things private. Who cares if someone copies your idea and makes a fortune off it, as long as you've kept it private and anybody can use it? I mean, what's the point of making something if you're just going to restrict that thing just so you can make some frickin' money? That is the most ridiculous way of living. I imagine what things would be like if that wasn't the case, if people actually cured disease because they wanted to cure disease. Imagine if I invented a product, because I wanted to actually just help people. I mean, wow. What's the deal? How did we get to this point? And you know what? It's the same exact thing that puts us into war and peace, commerce and blocked commerce, right? It's the same thing. It's the same mental breakdown that we all have. It's the same system of slavery that we're all subject to. And it's pathetic. So here's what you need to know about anything that has a patent on it. And they don't want you to know this, but whatever you see that is patented, whatever you see, you can reproduce. You have every right, because it's your natural right to experiment and dabble in the construction of things and science and all that. That's a right that comes way beyond the legal realm. What you don't have the right to do is sell that legally protected thing, patented idea, in mammon. That's what you don't have the right to do. But you can build for yourself. And you can build and give away as a gift anything you want. The whole system can be bypassed as long as you're not selling, as long as you're not falling for the greed system of the frickin' devil. That's the trick. I mean, it's that simple. Stop thinking of yourself. Stop thinking of money as your goal in life. Think about the amount of people that you can help. Think about the things that you can build in your own garage. Just by applying the moral principle that this thing is not for sale, if I'm going to give it away, even after I put all this hard-earned money into it, I'm going to do it in charity. I'm going to do it without greed and without the concepts of valuation and mammon. I'm not going to... What is wrong with us, right, that we participate in such a system? And going back to this concept of patenting a cancer, patenting 40% of the genes in the human body. My God, people. What is slavery if not that? And see, the problem is they're now altering us as Jules and other people from this station are certainly familiar with. They're altering us, they're evolving us into a state that is no longer of man. It is something else. When you're born with altered genes, with altered epigenome, with altered proteins and everything else, then what do you think is going to happen? Eventually, you're going to have enough proprietary parts of the United States or other countries in your body that you are that you're going to be merchandise. You're not you know look you're going to be part of the commercial system. They're not going to tell you this, but you're going to notice more and more that your rights, your forced rights, are going to be changed. That your person, your status, is going to be carried in your genes as you're going to be property, because you're letting all this shit happen. You're letting them patent you. I don't think people really fully understand that. See, this is, it goes beyond just a moral choice. It goes beyond just a spiritual choice. It goes to the point where literally, when you decide whether or not you're going to have a designer baby, you're deciding on many, many different things at that point. What can happen in the future, for instance? Will I have a say in whether or not this corporation that now owns my baby, whether you like it or not, owns the genes in my, owns the blueprint of my baby? Do you think you'll have a say in whether or not they clone that baby? There's so many things to think about. Will they use its DNA and its genetic makeup to create genetic weapons? What are they going to do with this stuff that they're patenting? They're designing, right? Because with a design comes a patent. Are you understanding what I'm trying to get out of here? We're entering into an age that is so much more frightening than anything I can imagine. And it's all based on the ignorance of each of us individually. You know, that reminds me. I had a guy on air, actually, that just kept insisting that he was free in America, because he was late, his status was an individual. He's not a citizen, he's a national, which is the same thing, and that he's an individual. And at the time, I couldn't think of anything to say to really make him understand that the person is not the man, that the status of the man is not the man. Right? So I'm frustrated. I couldn't answer the question. And then I realized all I had to do was define the word individual. Individual. You guys should go take a journey. Go look up the word individual. Because what does it mean to be individual? It means not divided. What does independence mean? It means not dependent. Individual. Not divided. See, I think they've. I think one of the greatest tricks that they've played, tricks of the mind, is the notion that united we stand. United we stand, divided we fall. But wait a minute. What can fall if we're all divided? What is there to fall if we're all divided, if we're all each separately or privately practicing the duty, the negative duty of the natural law? What can possibly fall? The only thing that can fall are fictions. The only thing that can fall are creations of man's mind. Nothing else can fall. What does it mean to be divided we fall? What kind of crap is that? You know, all these things that we're taught, all these little memes and all these things that are promoted, it turns out most of them are just absolute crap, and they're designed to keep you stuck in one matrix or the other, one artificial womb or the other. The employee is what makes the corporation run, right? And so you covet your job, You covet it, even though it's horror, it's hell, you're working for someone else, all your labor goes to someone else, all your property goes, you have nothing to show for all your years of work except mammon, except money, and things, things which are not yours. See, it's all about keeping us, quote-unquote, united. And, I'm starting to see through all this crap. I'm starting to see it for what it is. E pluribus unum, folks, out of many, one. E pluribus unum, out of many, one. Does that really actually sound like a good thing? Does that really, that sounds like United Nations to me. That sounds like Caesar to me. Well, it is a Latin term, so it's obviously part of the Roman law. E pluribus unum, out of many, one. What are we thinking here? Why would I want to be part of a whole that is not of nature, of God? Why would I want to be part of anything that says my voice doesn't count, only the whole single voice of all counts? Why would I want to be part of that? Why would I want my vote not to count? Why would I want to be stuck in a place where I have to pray to these false gods, these false magistrates, mayors, presidents, judges? Why would I want to be in that place? Why? And the real question, the real stinker that always gets me is, if I'm part of the people, then how can the people sue me? How come I can get the people a letter from the people saying that I have to appear in court? Well, wait a minute. That must mean I'm not part of the people. That must mean I'm something else. Because remember, the people is a sovereign entity. So how can a sovereign entity summon me like a demon, like one of its own demons, to one of its own fictional courts and jurisdictions, its little debtor's hell, its little executor? How is it that a sovereign entity can summon me and make me appear, cause me to appear, or arrest me if I don't, unless I'm not one of them? Is that really so hard to comprehend? Or are you still fooled by the notion that you're one of the people? So Trump, the big news, which I'm just absolutely amazed. I love switching between Fox News and like CNN or NBC. I love to see the difference in how they report things. I think it's hilarious. You tend to, even though you know the whole mainstream is absolutely, well, and the alternative for the most part is all crap. You still sort of go to whichever channel seems to be espousing what you want to hear. And you find yourself, again, even though you know the whole thing is a battle between two cousins of the same bloodline that have ruled us forever, even though you know that, and you know that in your heart of hearts you shouldn't be rooting for one or the other, you still are fooled by the propaganda. You're still fooled, and you still find an emotional response in the complete crap that is the political system and the electoral campaigns and the political parties and the cults of personality that follow. Yeah, it's absolutely ridiculous, but you do find yourself still sort of cheering behind the scenes for whichever one. In this case, though, I go back to Wu Man. I go back to all you female men. I know you don't like to be called that, but if you were not citizens of the United States, you'd just be men, because that's what God created, male and female. All right? Just like horses. There's horses, there's male and female. Right? Pigs, male and female. They're still pigs. Yeah, you can call them something else, but hey, let's try to stick to reality here. Then you have the positively declared state of womanhood. Just like you have Hugh Man, Hugh being the god of Sufism. Hugh Man is not man, it is the form of man without substance. You have Woe Man, the form of man without substance. The only way that you can have unequal rights to men, as legally defined, is if you declare yourself a woe man. This is why in the Bible it says, don't be anything but what you are. What are you? Well, if you're going to have equality, then you're just a man. Just like I'm just a man. The only way I can have power over you is to positively assign you rights that say you are less powerful than me. That's the only way. That's the beauty of the legal system, if I'm one of these gods, these magistrates, is that I can assign a status to anybody, I can fool them into accepting that status, and then I can even fool them into joining civil rights groups that actually worship that status, that actually love the class system enough. And remember, love and hate are synonymous. Both of those words lead back to belief. Right? Love and belief are the same word. If I believe in something enough, then it exists. And that's your problem, you see. Women's rights, gay rights, animal rights. These things, they don't exist in nature. They only exist in a realm where the breaking of the natural law is licensed. And remember, it's your right positively to be licensed. In other words, it's your right to have your status be unequal, and you have no right to complain. You are allowed by the rulers, because they figured out a long time ago in perhaps the third or fourth Matrix simulation that they have to allow people to do stupid, pointless things like protest and sign positions. Otherwise, they get antsy and they might actually uprise. Give them drugs, give them alcohol, give them entertainment, give them everything they need to keep them dumbed down and lazy. That's what they've figured out, and that's where we are. And every once in a while, we get off our asses and we sign a petition or we go protesting one of the stupidest things I've ever seen, actually, now that I understand all this. A petition. You know how much these guys love petitions? You know what they really love is online petitions, because that's just digital information. You know, they don't have to waste room in their trash cans and landfills anymore. They can just throw your petition, your digital signature, into a freaking file on a computer. It takes up no space at all. They love you for that, you freaking idiots. Do you really think that your petition means anything? Do you have a right to petition? No, you don't. You don't have the right of petition because you're not the people. I don't know what you think petition means, but petition doesn't mean all these stupid, you know, heartfelt petitions that are going around. That's not what the right to petition. The right petition the court is the right to appear before a magistrate in a private capacity, in a probate capacity. That's what petition means. It doesn't mean some written piece of paper that says, oh my God, save the whales. You want to save the freaking whales, you got to do it yourself. You got to ignore the law that says you can't save the whales. You got to ignore the law that makes you freaking fill out a piece of paper that makes you actually go and pray to your gods that they will save the whales when they're the ones funding the whole operation to kill the whales. You're thinking like slaves. You're not thinking in the natural capacity. You're not thinking with reason. You're thinking in the way you're trained to think. You're thinking like a good little member, a good little plugged-in sperm of the Matrix. Now, what did Trump say? Okay, all right. Now, my point here, after almost an hour, is that 11 years ago, this recording has been held on that long, which tells me that they probably planned the Trump run a long time ago. They were asking him about running for president a long time ago in interviews, even on Oprah. So it's probably been in the works for a long time. And they kept this little tidbit of information for 11 years under their belts at the NBC, and now they're releasing it, which to me would be, I would think, a violation of some privacy thing, but okay, whatever. The point I'm trying to make here is that, hey, who's complaining about this? Right? Who are the faces that are being put up on the media, six at a time, to go over how horrible this statement was? That's not even a current statement, has nothing to do with anything. You got six women up there, and they're all talking about how horrible it is that Trump said this in an unofficial capacity to his male friends. Grab them by the pussy. Well, I'll tell you what. This is my message that I want to get out to all the womans out there, all of you people who have fallen for the trap. If you want equal rights in any true capacity, well, then you're going to embrace exactly what Trump said. Because you know what he said? He said the truth. He said, when it comes to famous people, and man, after being in Hollywood, let me tell you, I can't tell you how many actresses that you think are, I'll tell you what, I'll put it to you this way, the best actresses in Hollywood didn't get there because they're good actresses. They got there with their mouths open, if you know what I mean. All right, these people are ruthless. They're not good people in Hollywood. They're, in fact, quite horrible people. I've talked to several before I understood the concept of what it meant, truly, this notion of Jewish, which is way different than anybody, I think, really understands. I talk to these guys, these directors, and they tell me stories that I can't repeat because it would be slander to tell the truth. Just like it's slander somehow for Donald Trump to talk about what he was talking about. But he was telling the truth. Now, if you want equal rights as a woman, then here's my message to you. Embrace exactly what Trump was saying. Why? Well, one, it's true. He's talking about famous people, people who want to be famous, that will do anything for that money and for that fame. Sorry, but it is the truth. And it was kind of funny, too, I gotta admit. But here's the deal. If women want equal rights with men in the legal system, then women need to learn how to be talked to as men. You're gonna have to understand that just like when you bitches get together and you gossip and you talk so much crap that I've been a witness to as well, and I don't like it, and I go in there, there's a locker room talk, and you know, when it's just men and they're talking about things that they would never talk about when women are present, just like women would never talk about these things when men are present. And they're talking and they're stating comments that in reality, that would get them probably harmed, slapped, or sued. Do you know how many lies people tell? Do you know how much bullshit goes around in male circles? It's just about as much as in female circles. I'm not here to tell you. I'm not sure who the bigger liar is, the female or the male in the species. But I'm going to say it's probably 50-50. In fact, there was a great documentary on Netflix called Dishonesty. I highly recommend it. Because once you see yourself as the liar you are, and we all do it. We all lie about our history. We all lie about our current lives. We lie about our jobs. We lie about the monotony of life. We lie about everything. Well, if you want to have equal rights, well, then you're going to have to let men treat you like men. Does a female of the species really want to be treated like trash? Like a man talking to another man who he's trying to impress with his libido? Does a woman really want to be treated like trash? Does a woman really, with your women's rights, do you really want to be treated like men? Or are you suggesting that men need to treat everybody like women? Because I don't see a middle ground there. I mean, what is this political correctness that you're searching for? I'm going to be honest, it doesn't exist. Because when you go back into your circles and when those talking heads with big boobs get off the screen, they're going to go to their circles and they're going to be just as crude as any of us. And so here is my final word on the subject. He or she who has no sin, cast the first fucking stone. Otherwise, get on with your shit, get on with your lives, go home, continue to be just as crude and vulgar as everyone else in private, and forget it. He or she who is innocent, cast the first freaking stone. See, the problem is those natural law concepts of the Bible don't apply here, because we're not talking about equality, true equity here. We're not talking about the moral law. We're talking about politics. We're talking about what makes the greatest headlines. We're talking about what makes the greatest profits, and that just has nothing to do with any of this anyway. I spent way too much time on that, but let's go over. I recently made a video on the voting aspect and how your vote is absolutely pointless, just like your petitions, just like everything you do. Every prayer you make to the public is pretty much worthless, and they might or they might not. The point is, you don't have the choice. You're giving up your choice with everything you do. You're in a state of causality. Cause and effect. You're the cause of your affections, the cause of your movements, the cause of your actions is not yourself. It is not the moral law. It is the legal system. And for the most part, the legal system causes you to do pointless things. It tells you to take the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, all the concepts of man that are worthless knowledge, and to eat and just yum it up. Because, hey, that's what it's all about, pointless things. If you could be caught and stuck in pointless things, receiving pointless script from a pointless corporation in commerce that we call a district, if you can be stuck in a never-ending loop your entire life in commerce, which is absolutely pointless in the end, if you can always constantly be focused on temporary things instead of the permanence and beauty of nature itself, if you can constantly be stuck in a world where everything you do is to support the artificial intelligence, the artificial structure, the artificial law, the artificial banking system, well, then you're technically, you're in the matrix. You're in that concept of a matrix. Again, an artificial womb, which refers to the not the Iron Mountain Report, but Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars. Quiet Weapons for Silent Wars, whatever it was. I want to tell you about the president. Now, we understand that the president is not elected by the people. If you don't understand that, you can watch my recent documentary It's posted right now at strawmanstory.info. And on my blog at realityblogger.wordpress.com, which I no longer really am contributing to except to post new things like that. But I want to tell you why this is so important. Why? It's one thing to say, oh, well, our vote doesn't count. It's pointless. Why even go vote when the popular vote isn't actually counted? You know, what's it? But why? Why is it that it's so important for the private people, the bloodline, to always have their king that they put into place? And you find that even, you know, you go back to Lincoln. First of all, of course, you go back to Washington. Washington wanted to be king, but there were several writers of the time that kind of put a nix on that, so they just decided to be president. There was no election for president. Washington was appointed president, and his heraldic arms are still the flag of the United States. His arms, his family crest, in other words, is still the blue part of the United States flag. It's flown in all the churches. It's very celebrated. He was the highest Masonic figure in the United States. His Masonic apron is very celebrated. And there's the George Washington Masonic Museum in Washington, D.C. There's all kinds of things that show exactly what Washington was. Now, you go to the elections, you find... sons and cousins always winning the elections. You find, for instance, Lincoln and Douglas were running against each other in the 1858, I think it was. I can't remember. Election back then. You have George Bush and John Kerry. Which were ninth cousins, both descendants of the kings of England. In fact, John Kerry was the 38th descendant, direct descendant, as in great-great-great-grandson of Vlad the Impaler, and Bush was the 34th great-great-great-grandson of Vlad the Impaler. Therefore, George Bush was the elder. George Bush had the more senior bloodline, therefore George Bush would be president. So you got a series of bloodline cousins constantly running for president. You never have a choice because your choice is between two parts of the whole. That's not choice, that's causality. That means the bloodline will always win because only the bloodline is running. That includes Ron Paul. I'm sorry to burst that bubble. That includes the current alternative candidate, any governors, anybody who's in any important place that's an executive officer, always, always in my research part of the bloodline. Okay? This is not something that should be shocking. It's not something that's a conspiracy theory. No, it's part of the conspiracy of the United States. It is... I can't even believe people debate it. I mean, every other country is run like this. Every other country. But somehow we've been taught this alternative history of freedom and democracy, even though they hate democracy. They use democracy for their purposes because they know it's such an evil system. I'm just amazed. I really am amazed. You know, once you get to the top of this heap of crap and you look down, you're just amazed that you were part of this blind-eyed, doe-eyed, you know, deer-in-headlights society that actually cannot figure these things out. It just amazes me. Why is the president, though, such an important role? And for this, I want to... I've got a documentary in the making. I don't know when I'll ever get to it, but it's called A National Emergency, or it's got several titles that, of course, I've changed over the years because, you know, you find out that things don't mean what they what you thought they mean. So I actually originally titled this The Day the Constitution Died. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's bullshit. I forgot, you know, the Constitution wasn't designed for me. So for me to suggest that what the president is doing is non-constitutional is absolutely ridiculous. because the Constitution was their document made for them and their posterity, not for me. Now, I took this from a lot of this anyway, not all of it, but it was originally researched and written in 1979 by Dr. Eugene Schroeder and other esteemed researchers that put this together. It was very poorly written, a lot of mistakes and spelling errors and that kind of thing, and I wanted to take it, revamp it, put it in better order, and do a documentary out of it. And that'll probably still happen, because I think this is some of the most important information that's out there, because what is the president? Folks, the president is a king. The president has been declared absolute power by Congress. Congress knows this. Congress is fully aware of this. There is no secret. But you see, what they have is the asset of secrecy, not necessarily... it's what you call open secrecy. In other words, they just don't talk about this. You don't talk about this. Should be the only thing that's talked about in the presidential debates. This is the only thing that you only questions you would ever ask the candidates is, will they end the horrific power that the president of the United States has to bypass Congress at every turn, to declare national emergencies like they're going out of style? This is the only thing that anybody should be talking about in any presidential campaign. The only questions that should be asked. Nothing else matters. I say this because this is the top tier level of power and information. This, the nothing else, everything else falls under this particular thing. Right? Without this, without the ability to declare national emergency, all those executive orders, out the window. All the powers of the president that you keep saying are unconstitutional, which is a lie, that you tell yourselves to make you still think you're free somehow, okay, fine. But all that would be gone if it weren't for this one thing that happened in history that has been carried over. National emergency, as defined in Black's Law, is a state of national crisis, a situation demanding immediate and extraordinary national or federal action. Okay, extraordinary. That's beyond anything that you equate to as normal or constitutional or anything else. Essentially, the Constitution goes out the window when it comes to any kind of state of war or national emergency. And yes, that is, in fact, constitutional. The Constitution being suspended in an act of war or emergency is constitutional. You got to understand that. That's probably one of the most important aspects of this, because you're so fooled by the Constitution. You're so fooled that the Constitution is better or a replacement for the Bible, for the law itself. You worship this thing as if it is the Bible. But it has nothing to do with you. It was created by them to control their own private rights. A national emergency, again, a state of national crisis, a situation demanding immediate, extraordinary national or federal action. Extraordinary. Now, in Brown versus Bernstein, a D.C. case in the Supreme Court, I believe, Congress has made, this is a quote, Congress has made little or no distinction between a state of national emergency and a state of war. Again, Brown versus Bernstein, D.C., PA, 49F, Supplemental 728 and 732. Congress has made little or no distinction between a state of a national emergency and a state of war. What is a declaration of emergency, folks? Do you comprehend that it's a state of war? It's a state of war against the emergency. So if I declare a war against terrorism, which is a non-existent thing, a non-existent title, that no terrorist in their right mind would ever call themselves, that means that I have the ability, as the god of the nation, the king of the nation, the magistrate, the head exec, the CEO of the of the district, the Caesar. That means I have the right, then, to declare who is a terrorist. A non sequitur word, a word that has no place in nature, no place in reality. That means I can declare you, they can declare me, they can, any one of you is a terrorist. Homegrown terror, remember? Well, folks, there's a war on against terrorism. So if you're labeled terror, then you have absolutely no rights under the doctrines of war except what they've described, what they've prescribed under the Libre Code, the rules of war, the Geneva Codes, that sort of thing. This is why I keep... I mean, how do you tell a bunch of people who think that... who falsely believe they're free are the ones that are most hopelessly enslaved. How do you tell a bunch of people who think they're free that they're actually under the National Emergency Declaration, they're under the Libre Code, which is the rules of war? How do you tell people that? Now, again, the Civil War was a war of aggression, northern aggression. Nothing civil about the Civil War, as they say, because that's not what it means. It's not as if they dressed up to the T and attacked the southern states with civility and pride. No, that's not what civil means. But it's a joke in the South, a sort of a very realistic saying that there was nothing civil about the Civil War. You had carpetbaggers, those Jews. You had all kinds of horrible things happening. Brothers killing brothers, cousins killing cousins. Why? Because you can be made, you fools can be made to do anything on behalf of the nation. And that was what Lincoln said. He said, I don't give a shit about slavery. Got plenty of quotes about Lincoln. He said, who cares about slavery? My only interest in this war is to keep the Union together. The corporation. The fiction. People in the South are like, hey, wait a minute, your bankruptcy charter is coming due. Wait a minute. We don't want to be a part of this nation because that means we have to forever disclaim all of our rights to any of this land. We have to give our lands up to the federal government. Wait a minute. These states aren't part of the federal government. Wait. We don't want to do that. So yeah, hell yeah, we're willing to go to war to keep our lands in our hands, to not have to pay tribute to Caesar, which is the District of Columbia. Absolutely, we're willing to go to war for that. Well, naturally, the War of Northern Aggression happened. And those southern states were the victims. But hey, I want to tell you something, folks. Do you actually believe that the Civil War ever ended? Do you believe that the Civil War ever ended? Do you believe that a Civil War was ever declared? It's kind of like the War on Terrorism. It just kind of happens through executive order. I mean, I could go back and I could find Lincoln's executive orders, and I could read you those, which were the Declaration of War, which is not an official or legal, lawful Declaration of War. It's an executive order, just like what we're suffering from today. Hundreds of executive orders. Now, we're all taught in history. I'm on the National Park Service website. It's the Appomattox Courthouse website, National Historic Park in Virginia. And here's what it says on that government website, at the Appomattox Courthouse website. It says, where's the courthouse where the quote-unquote surrender took place? Now, this is the government's answer. Listen very carefully, folks. Where is the courthouse where the surrender of the Civil War of the South took place? Here's the answer. And this should give you a hell of a kick in the ass. The surrender occurred in the village of Appomattox Courthouse. They used to call cities courthouses, of course. Idiot Americans don't know that the word courthouse was used as the name of a city, not an actual courthouse. Okay? The surrender occurred in the village of Appomattox Courthouse, two words, courthouse, Virginia. in a private home owned by the McLean family in Virginia. In Virginia, many of the towns which were county seats were called courthouse. The building is spelled courthouse, one word, and the town is courthouse, two words. Okay. But wait a minute. Did we fully answer the question? The next question is, where was the treaty signed? Okay, so we went from surrender to where was the treaty signed? Because the law states that in order to end a war, there has to be a treaty or a presidential proclamation. Okay? But remember, this wasn't a war of Congress. This was a war of executive order. It couldn't be a war of Congress because Congress was disbanded. Congress was abandoned. The southern states abandoned their seats in Congress. Of course, there was no congressional vote for war. This was purely to save the Union, to force those congressmen back into Congress and to cooperate. It's organized crime. Was there a treaty signed? Well, we know that the surrender took place, but was there a treaty signed? And here's the answer. And again, I don't know what to tell you, folks. This is telling you literally that you're still at war, civil war. There's a war that the common people, between the common people and the private people through their national institution, their national government. Here's what it says. Where was the treaty signed? Government says, well, there was no treaty signed to end the Civil War. Right? Go back again. There was no treaty signed to end the Civil War. Well, how does a declaration go away without a treaty or without something saying, hey, okay, we're going to stop this? Well, answer me this. If you were king, or if you were the Congress, the Kingmaker Congress, you know, that's through the Electoral College, if you were king, would you give up the powers of war? Would you give up the powers of emergency? Well, don't answer that yet, because maybe you don't fully understand what powers these guys actually have. But remember, the law of necessity is equal to the law of war. Okay, when war takes place, the law of necessity rules, and the law of necessity is defined as the fact that there is no law. Would you give up that power? Would you sign a treaty to end the Civil War, knowing that you were going to lose your war powers? Oh, don't talk about Lincoln like that. Lincoln was a good guy. Lincoln wasn't a good guy. Lincolnstein, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Read past the famous quotes. Read where he says he had no interest in ending slavery, only in preserving the Union. Read what happened during the Civil War. No good man would ever cause that to happen. It goes on. There was no treaty signed to end the Civil War. The surrender at Appomattox Courthouse was purely a military surrender of an army which was surrounded. Okay, so again, technically, that was still part of the, according to the United States, the district of the northern, you know, states, basically, that was still part of the United States Army, and it was the Army that was in rebellion, Civil War. Okay, the surrender at Appomattox Courthouse was a military surrender of an army which was surrounded. The Confederate government never surrendered. Again, the Confederate government never surrendered. And even had it wanted to, the United States government would likely not have accepted. Now, I've never, honestly, never seen a government be so honest about anything, because this brief little paragraph says so much when you actually do the research into what it means. The Confederate government never surrendered, and even had it wanted to, the United States would not have accepted it? Well, no, because that would have ended the war. That would have been a declaration of peace. true peace, not the kind we have today. Well, why? Why would the corp? Why would the if the Confederate government, by the way, never surrendered? It was a military surrender. In other words, essentially a coup. It was already a coup, and then it was a recouping. Where was the war? Where exactly? What was it a war between? Because hey, listen to this. Why did the Confederate government? Why would the United States not have accepted a surrender? This is very important, folks. To do so would have legally acknowledged the existence of the Confederate States of America and would have legitimized it and given it certain legal status internationally. So to recognize, even to declare in a public fashion whatsoever, in any way, shape, or form, for the United States to have declared the Confederate States of America to actually have its own separate government, etc., would have been a declaration that this was an actual nation, that it was under the law of nations that it was dealing with. Therefore, it would have had all the rights and privileges and immunities of nations. It would have fallen under the law of war. You see, this was an internal corporate structure, an internal corporate war. It did not fall under the law of nations or any other type of quote-unquote moral structure, moral law structure. That's why the atrocities of the Civil War happened, because the United States government would not recognize these people who wanted to separate from it as a moral entity, a moral person, as they call it. And this is pure evil, folks. I'm sorry. There's nothing romantic. There's nothing civil, as they say, about it. This was just pure frickin' evil. Treaties, it says, are between two nations. And the U.S. would never concede the legal existence of the Confederacy, even though it had a government, armies, taxes, and all the trappings of a modern government. It says, with the United States, the North would never accede that the South was a separate entity. You see, therefore, what's most ironic about this, just to put this into perspective, folks, all the war crimes that we blame on all these other countries, Saddam Hussein bombs his and harms his own people, Libya harms their own people, Syria, they harm their own people. Well, that's what the Civil War was, folks. Exactly the same situation. You see one faction saying, I don't want to be a part of this tyrannical government anymore. They're using us, they're spreading their crops down here using slave labor, and they're extracting everything from us. We're not part of that original, you know, we're being used and abused down here. We don't want to be a part. We certainly don't want to sign our lands over as collateral for the debts of the United States to England and France that were left over and constitutional from the war. We don't want to do that. Well, the insurgents are arising. We're going to go beat the shit out of them. Well, that's what these countries are doing. That's what Iraq does. That's what Iran does. That's what all these Syria, Libya, United States, that's what they all do. How about England? I mean, for God's sake, how many heads were pounded by England? How many? Right? This is the same structure that's been in place. We say in our righteousness, oh, well, we're going to go defend the poor establishments, just like we defended ourselves, the Northern aggressors, in 1860, whatever, 62, 64. We're going to go defend the established, you know, the very people that are in charge to create a peaceful commercial avenue so that we can extort and exact everybody and everything. That's who we're going to defend. That's why we killed Gaddafi. who says every man should have a home, and that I'm not going to put my father into a home until I build a home for every one of my people. I'm going to bring water to the desert, and I'm going to green up the desert. Nope, gotta kill him. Gotta kill him. He's trying to be a xenophobe. He wants to get out of the New World Order. Nope, gotta kill him. Right? Oh, Saddam Hussein, let's use him as a patsy, even though he had nothing to do with 9/11. We got an old grudge. We're going to go get him, because he's harming his own people. His own people are fighting against him. We're going to go replace him with one of our establishment candidates. It's the same old thing. And you know what? This is really the original campaign where all this started. And since it's what, 1940s? The last 60 years, we've had, I don't know, we've invaded 60 countries, something like that, to terrorize them and to replace their governments, to nation build, to ensure that our corporate invested corporations can go over there so we can blame them for our shitty economy. I mean, that's, if you guys aren't seeing how this is all interworking, it's absolutely horrible. So there you have it, right from the Appomattox Courthouse website, National Park Service, government telling you, hey, Civil War never ended. There was no treaty. It was a military surrender, just like there's a military surrender in Iraq or Afghanistan, wherever. Right, the insurgents said, okay, I'm not going to... An insurgent, by the way, is actually a word that means the good guys fighting for their very own nation, right? The good guys are the insurgents, not the bad guys. We always fight the insurgents. We always fight the good guys. You ever notice that? Look up the word insurgents in the old dictionaries and you'll see. So, now, we are left with... let's see. Where do I go from here? Let's go back to the, okay, why is it so important that the president keep this power that was really gained by Lincoln? That notion that executive order number 001 or 0001 was literally a declaration against his own people, against the common people, the laborer class, right? The lower class, which is all of us. Why is it so important for the president to have that power? Well, obviously the Constitution doesn't allow this kind of thing. It you know, you got to bypass the very thing that keeps sort of this moral order in a legal capacity anyway, which is sort of an oxymoron. So you got to bypass that power that stops you from doing horrible things. And so in this way, as long as the president has the power to declare national emergency and do all these things against Congress without Congress being able to do anything about it, that way Congress can pretend to be the good guys. Congress is the good guys. That's why these congressmen are coming out with Trump and they're saying, oh, I can no longer support Trump. I'm a good guy, honestly, and I cannot, I can't support Trump. We're two good guys. Really? You're all involved in child trafficking. You're all involved in the worst kind of banking and fraud, and you're going to come out against Trump again for telling the truth, basically, and I mean, it's just bad. The whole thing is ridiculous, but see, Congress is always acting like they're the good guys. We're the representatives of the people. Ah, honest we are. And honest, you guys can vote and we'll count your vote. Bleh. Wrong. We don't trust you to vote. Are you kidding? You common mass of illiterates, get out of here. The whole thing's a sham. But in this way, we have this pretended competition between the Congress and the president. And the Congress can say, oh, we're powerless. Oh, what can we do? The president is such a mongrel dictator. What can we possibly do? Well, let me tell you how that actually happened. Because what Congress is really saying is, oh, we assigned all of our power over to the president. We're very happy to have done so because he can act outside of our law and he can do all kinds of things that we can't. And therefore, we love the fact that the president has all this power. But oh, our hands are tied. Oh, all we'd have to do is cancel the national emergency that we the power of the national emergency that we declared and gave to the president so long ago. Oh, but our hands are... Wait a minute, our hands aren't tied. We could stop this at any time if we want to do, but we don't want to. We're going to keep pretending that we have no power over this horrible president. And the presidential power gets passed on to the next bloodline cousin. And Congress, of course, is all cousins with the president. It's one big happy family. It's all illusion. It's all, we're all suffering from a grand delusion. Why is it so important to prop up one of the family puppets, one of the bloodline into the president's? Because it has so much power. I guarantee you that if someone like myself became president, the first thing that Congress would do would be to cancel the national emergency powers so that I had no power to do anything to Congress. Because they'd keep their immunity. Under the national emergency, the president could do anything he wanted to Congress, because they wouldn't have their immunity. Because there is no law in war. There's no constitution in a state of emergency. State of emergency is the same as war. Congress has made little or no distinction between a state of national emergency and a state of war. So as long as one of their family members is there that they know is not going to bust them for all the organized crime that they do, they're going to keep this in place. But like I said, if I were president, first thing they'd do, cancel national emergency. How did this all take place? How did this all happen? On November 19th, 1973, a special committee of Congress was convened to review and decide upon the relevance of what it referred to as the national, the declared national emergency. Okay? The name given to this special congressional committee, which you could go check out for yourself, was the Special Committee on the Termination of the National Emergency. Special Committee on the Termination of the National Emergency. Okay? So here's Congress getting together saying, should we, after all, it's been 40 years. Should we actually cancel this special power we've given to president? This tells you that Congress can cancel all these national emergencies anytime they want to. That's the most important point I want to get across here. That means they're complicit. They have the power to stop at any time and take back their power. But they don't want the power. They want the power to pretend that they don't have power. They want the power to make laws, and they want the power to then break those laws anytime they want through the executive branch, which is why all the power is being created in the executive branch. Because as long as the president's under a state of national emergency, i.e. a state of war against an emergency, hey, guess what? Constitution goes in the trash. Law goes in the – lawmaker's law goes in the trash. We still pretend like it's law. We still follow it. We still – even the Libra Code says – that even the Libra Code itself says that when a country is conquered, it will still follow, it will still pretend to follow under the law that was already established. I mean, even the Libra Code says that. So that's what we do. We pretend to still be bound by the law, even though we're in a state of war, a state of necessity, and necessity knows no law. All right? You see, they've got the best of both worlds going. They can create law. We can pretend and have an administrative structure that pretends we're under this law. But at any time, because of the state of national emergency, which they allow, the president can bypass all of it. The executive branch can do anything the hell it wants. From the 93rd Congress first session, in its Senate report number 93-549, this committee and its actions were recorded in the annals of U.S. congressional history by the United States Government Printing Office, Washington, D.C., and this special committee report was officially entitled, quote, Emergency Powers Statutes, Provisions of Federal Law, now in effect, delegating to the Executive Extraordinary Authority in Time of National Emergency, a report of the Special Committee on the Termination of National Emergency in the United States Senate. Now, needless to say, the end goal of this report was obviously they decided not to terminate the national emergency. if that was the case, then Obama wouldn't have just redeclared the 9/11 emergency against terrorism, as he does every year. All this really did was establish a law that said, okay, you can keep doing the national emergency, you can keep having absolute dictatorial powers in the executive branch, as long as you simply write it out every year and say, I am redeclaring the national emergency every year. Otherwise, it will automatically be canceled. So they decided not to get away with do away with the power of the executive to be a dictator. They said, well, if you don't redeclare after a year, it'll go away automatically. The following. This is the foreword of that report. Again, that report is 93rd Congress, first session, Senate report 93-549, Emergency Power Statutes. Here's what it says in the foreword. Quote, and I'm going to keep quoting. Since March 9th, 1933, the United States has been in a state of declared national emergency. Okay, in other words, we've been lawless, but we pretend to still have law. In fact, there are now, in effect, four presidentially proclaimed states of national emergency. This is 1973, by the way. In addition to the national emergency declared by President Roosevelt in 1933, there are also the national emergencies proclaimed by President Truman on December 16, 1950, during the Korean conflict. States of national emergency declared by President Nixon on March 23, 1970, and August 15, 1971. These proclamations give force to 470 provisions of federal law. They give force to 470 provisions of federal law. In other words, that law could not exist without. And this was 40 years ago here. Okay, we're talking. These laws cannot exist without the power of the executive order or presidential directive. 470 provisions of federal law that could not exist unless the president declares a national emergency, i.e. a state of war. These hundreds of statutes delegate to the president extraordinary powers, presidential directives, and presidential executive orders, ordinarily exercised by the Congress, which affect the lives of American citizens in a host of all-encompassing manners. The vast range of powers taken together confer enough authority to rule the country without reference to normal constitutional processes, unquote. Now here is the Congress admitting they absolutely know 100% that the president can rule the country without them. They know it. They're deciding whether or not to get rid of this power. They have the power to destroy it, to end it at any time. But like I said, until someone like me becomes president, they're not going to take away that power. Here's what Congress says in this report. Quote, under the powers delegated by these statutes, the president may seize property, organize and control the means of production, seize commodities, assign military forces abroad, institute martial law, seize and control all transportation and communication, regulate the operation of private enterprise, restrict travel, and listen to this, folks, and in a plethora of particular ways, control the lives of all American citizens. That's the current and past power of the President of the United States, the President of the District, Caesar. Congress is so absolutely aware of this, and they're not going to change it. This should be the only thing that people are talking about in any presidential declaration, any presidential election. This should be at the forefront of every conversation. Why? Because these proclamations, this executive order, the directives that come from the president, from the executive office, give force to, at this time, over 470 provisions of federal law, and in our time, let's talk about what it gives provision to. How about things like the Patriot Acts? How about all of the wars that we've participated in, the wars declared by Congress, their countries that we've invaded? That was part of the powers delegated by these statutes, which was assign military forces abroad. Hey, guess what? We have military forces in 192 frickin' countries right now. 192 countries at last time I checked. All controlled by the executive authority, all absolutely outside of the decadence of Congress. Completely within presidential control. Congress has nothing to do with it, and they're very happy to have their hands clean. They're very happy to have this absolute dirty motherfucker in the office controlling the hat of president. They're very happy to have Caesar in office because they can take away Caesar's power at any time. Anytime they want to. In a plethora of particular ways, control the lives of all American citizens. Oh, well, that's okay. He's a good guy. He's our first black president. He must be good. With the melting, quote, with the melting of the Cold War, the developing detent within the Soviet Union and China, the stable truce over the 20 years duration between North and South Korea, and the end of U.S. involvement in the war, in Indochina, there is no present need for the United States government to continue to function under emergency conditions. Well, then why did you let them? Why did you continue? Because you love it. Because you want it. Because you know that it's how all of this organized crime can happen. Quote, the Special Committee on Termination of National Emergency was created to examine the consequences of terminating the declared states of national emergency that now prevail, and to recommend what steps the Congress should take to ensure that the termination can be accomplished without adverse effect upon the necessary tasks of governing, and also to recommend ways in which the United States can meet future emergency situations with speed and effectiveness, but without relinquishing of congressional oversight and control. All right, so again, Congress ain't stupid. They're never going to give away their power to end this power that they have bestowed upon the president. The president can't do nothing without Congress. But the power that they have bestowed says the president can do anything without Congress as long as there's a national emergency, i.e. war declared. So you have Obama's National Emergency Declaration. This one particular is in 2009. You just had another one that Shelley was mentioning last week. By the President of the United States of America, it says on April 26, 2009, the Secretary of Health and Human Services, the Secretary, first declared a public health emergency under 319. Oh, this one's for the flu. Nevertheless, the 2009 H1N1 pandemic continues to evolve. The rates of illness continue to rise rapidly. I think there was like 30 deaths. And continues across the nation. No, it didn't actually. And the potential exists for the pandemic to overburden healthcare resources in some locations. No, not true at all. Therefore, I, Barack Obama, President of the United States of America, by virtue of the authority vested in me by the Constitution and the laws of the United States. Okay, so the first thing you got to get out of your head that this is unconstitutional. That's all bullshit. It's all bullshit because you are not a party of the Constitution. They are. This is perfectly constitutional. As bizarre as it sounds that the Constitution allows the Constitution to be dissolved, sorry, it's constitutional. Wake up from your delusion, including sections 201 and 301 of the National Emergencies Act, which is 50 U.S. Code, 1601, etc., and the Social Security Act, 42 U.S. Code, 1320B-5. And he basically goes on, he says, I'm continuing the national emergency on the flu. So we have a war against the flu. What does that mean? Well, we can force vaccinate. We can do all kinds of things that we wouldn't be able to do otherwise. Does Congress care about that? Nope. They're very happy. Very happy because, hey, they give him the power. Now, before this happened in 1933, when the Farm Bill was passed, I want to read a couple quotes. Even way back when, this is Charles E. Hughes, Supreme Court Justice in 1920, from the book Constitutional Development by Carl Brent Swisher. He quotes Hughes as saying, "We may well wonder, in view of the precedents now established, whether constitutional government is heretofore maintained in this republic could survive another great war, even victoriously waged. The conflict known as World War I, in other words, has ended as far as military hostilities were concerned, but was not yet officially terminated. Most of the war statutes were still in effect. Many of the emergency organizations were still in operation in 1920. So, again, government is in no hurry to get rid of this power that is gained from war statutes or war declarations. And what they did is they figured out in 1933 that, hey, we can make it a permanent thing. So what happened? Well, Roosevelt was elected. Roosevelt was one of the worst presidents we could possibly have ever had. He had a complete plan going on, not his own plan, of course, a plan between the family. And in 1933, they passed the Farm Bill. Farm Bill is a very important bill, and it includes the Doctrine of Emergency. Congressman James M. Beck, speaking in 1933 on the Congressional Record, said this. He said, quote, "I think of all the damnable heresies that have ever been suggested in connection with the Constitution, the Doctrine of Emergency is the worst. It means that when Congress declares an emergency, there is no Constitution. This means its death. It is the very doctrine that the German Chancellor is invoking today in the dying hours of the parliamentary body of the German Republic, namely, that because of an emergency, it should grant to the German Chancellor, i.e. Hitler, absolute power to pass any law, even though the law contradicts the Constitution of the German Republic. Chancellor Hitler is at least frank and honest about it. We, however, pay the Constitution lip service, but the result is the same. The Constitution of the United States, as a restraining influence in keeping the federal government within the carefully prescribed channels of power, is moribund, if not dead. We are witnessing its death agonies. For when this bill becomes a law, speaking of the Farm Bill, if unhappily it becomes a law, there is no longer any workable constitution to keep the Congress within the limits of its constitutional powers." That's 1993, Congressman James Beck. On the record, folks. First sentence of the Senate report, 93-549 from 1973, here's what it says. "This vast range of powers taken together confer enough authority to rule the country without reference to normal constitutional processes." To rule the country without reference to normal constitutional processes. Under the powers delegated by these statutes, we already covered that. In a plethora of particular ways, control the lives of all American citizens. Senate report also says, let's see. Oh, I'm going to move on from that and go to, oh, where are you? Referring to emergency powers, Senate Report 93-549 says they're quite careful and restrictive on the power, but the power to suspend is specifically contemplated by the Constitution in the writ of habeas corpus. The powers to suspend the Constitution and to suspend habeas corpus, which is why you don't see it today. why you bring up habeas corpus in a court, they laugh at you. The restrictive power of war, again, the law of necessity is what allows all this stuff to happen. I can't stress this enough. Again, this is why this should be the only topic ever discussed. the person that is put into the presidency, the only reason you would want someone to be president is their promise, their oath, their binding oath, contractually stated, that they will end this national emergency. They will force Congress to end the national emergency or arrest Congress. It's got to end, and it's got to end permanently. Because we haven't had this pretended government that we all pretend that we have has not been in existence. It pretends to exist. It administrates things as long as you people are fooled into believing it exists, into believing that we're still under the system of law, well, then it goes on. It pretends. Right? But as soon as you wake up and realize we are a dictatorship, not a republic, not any of these romantic versions of what you think we are, as soon as you wake up to that, hey, guess what? Civil war. Civil war. Oh, but wait a minute. Civil war never ended, did it? So you're caught. You're stuck between being part of something completely evil and accepting it, or you're an insurgent, right? You actually are willing to die for what you believe in, and you believe this is wrong. See, that's the problem, man. That's the choice. Well, most people are going to choose, hey, you know, let's just allow the mafia to continue. Let's allow the organized crime to continue. Hey, we're profiting from it, right? We got our pretended property, even though it's not ours. We got our pretended this and pretended that. And you got papers that show where, you know, papers please. This is nothing new, folks, by the way, in France. The Constitution can be suspended under what's called the State of Siege. In Great Britain, it's called the Defense of the Realms Act. Of course, the Queen has all those executive authority powers. In Germany, Hitler became dictator because it was called it was under Article 48, which said if the public safety and order of the German Reich are seriously disturbed or endangered, i.e. an emergency happens, the President of the Reich may suspend or in whole or in part the fundamental rights established, including inviolability of person, domicile, freedom of opinion and expression, freedom of assembly, exactly the same things that our Constitution, quote-unquote, can be suspended. Okay, it's nothing new. In the United States, we call it the War Powers Act. You can look at 12 U.S. Code as my last little bit here. 12 U.S. Code, Section 95B. Here it is, right there. Here's where Congress laid over the power, man. The actions, regulations, rules, licenses, orders, and proclamations heretofore or hereafter taken, promulgated, made, or issued by the President of the United States or the Secretary of the Treasury since March the 4th, 1933, pursuant to the amended code we're talking about, are hereby approved and confirmed. Do you hear that, folks? Whatever the president does, any rules, licenses, orders, regulations, proclamations made before or after this date, taken by the president or the Secretary of the Treasury, which is why the banking system is so wild, is approved and confirmed. In other words, the president doesn't need Congress to put out an executive order. This is tyranny, folks. This is a state of lawlessness that we call law. Everything the president, this is Congress, folks. Everything the president does is hereby approved or confirmed after March the 4th, 1933. It's right there in the code, man. You're in, I don't know what to tell you. Like, you're in this 1984 New World Order. Great New World Order. Wake the fuck up. Better day.
Rounds a minute trying to stop them. Don't put that on your wish list, that's retarded babble. Protesters make the Hitler soon as they start to rabble. They are nothing but fishes in the barrel. It doesn't have to be Christmas for a carol. Some decorate with ornamental decorum. Some perform shock and awe on Hanukkah and Purim. That's where my job come in. I am a blessing to the mercenaries or the corporations selling weapons to them. Any potential competitor step into them. I'm authorized to knock them out and stick a GPS into them.